Good morning, everyone. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Drew Quintero lives a charmed life. He comes to the Mary Griffith Show and brings his boss with him, and they announce that Drew is here. And then, you know, I go, well, is anybody else with Drew? Oh, yeah. Some other person is here, too. It happens to be Drew's boss, Melissa McKelvey. Melissa, do you have this problem? Is he constantly trying to overthrow the queen?
You know, I always say no one is Drew's boss.
I think you've got that right. Quintero, I'm going to put you to work right away. Plug your golf tournament real quick before we get into the meat of the operation. I'm trying to save your job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, we are holding our 19th annual golf benefit Friday, May 17th, and registration is now open. It is a four-person scramble, and you can register that team online at cornerstone-quincy.org, or you can give us a call at 217-222-8254. It is a great time benefiting children's mental health. We have whole sponsorships available as well if there is a business or organization that would like to show their support in that way. And we also have a $50,000 hole-in-one prize on hole number two at Spring Lake Country Club. If you get a hole-in-one on that, we will split that $50,000 prize with you, $25,000 to you and $25,000 to us to help children's mental health.
Scotty Scheffler, when you're done winning today, head on to Quincy. Shoot that hole in one so that Cornerstone can get it. The great thing about it is people say, well, you wouldn't want that to happen. Oh, yeah, you've already bought the insurance policy,
right?
Right?
Absolutely.
You
yes.
want them to hit that hole in one so yes. you can get 25 and they get 25.
That is right. Smith Brothers Power Sports is our hole in one sponsor again this year, and we are so thankful for their support and all of the support from everyone in the community. And registration open. Final deadline to register your team or your whole sponsorship is Thursday, May 9th.
Okay, so get on it. I'm turning his microphone off now, and he'll snooze just as he does behind his desk every day at Cornerstone while the rest of us work on. Oh, by the way, yesterday was a great day in sports. Of course, Scotty Scheffler standing on the porch going, excuse me, I'd just like to win this tournament and get it over with, but he has to go back today. And then the best NASCAR finish in the world, because all you care about is the crashes. Last lap, super crash. People cross the finish line upside down. People cross the finish line with their car on the side. It doesn't matter. As long as you get across the finish line. And, you know, there's an analogy to life about that, I think. Mm-hmm. Melissa McKelvey joins us. She is the executive director of Cornerstone. And I'm going to let you tell us, because we have you guys on once a month. I think a lot of people are familiar. This morning we did a news story about a program you have for expectant mothers and people with children up to the age of five. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people still don't know what Cornerstone is. So talk a little bit about Cornerstone's mission and what you do, Melissa, and then we'll delve into our topic for today.
Sure, Mary. Cornerstone, you know, when I started this job less than a year ago, but I had to learn a lot about Cornerstone and recognize that there's two different parts to Cornerstone, each equally as important. We have our traditional outpatient therapy where people can use insurance, their EAPs, they can self-pay. We have a sliding fee scale, and we offer therapy and counseling out of our offices. And then we have our nonprofit arm where we have the program you talked about where we have home visitors for young parents with young children. We have an adoption preservation program where our therapists work with families to keep adoptions intact. And we have what's called our comprehensive youth services, where therapists go into schools and provide therapy for students and families who might not have access to care otherwise. So that is our nonprofit arm, and all of those are services are free of cost to the people who partake of them.
That is fantastic. We just had Bunny, the therapy dog, from Quincy Junior High on. And I know that the counselors there do an awful good job of trying to help the children with their mental health, but sometimes even Bunny the therapy dog isn't enough, and so they may take a referral. So the most important thing for parents out there to know is that help is available. Mm-hmm. The earlier you get help for your child, the better. That children have problems too.
Yes.
And oftentimes children develop some of the similar problems their older people in their life have.
Exactly. Because
as we see, we learn. Today, I think your topic is going to be on obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yes.
I have a wonderful story to share.
Oh, good.
In my childhood, mm-hmm. I did not know you could go to the store and buy a bar of soap. Our family never bought a single bar of soap the entire time I was a child. We had a gigantic, one of those, probably 55, it was probably more like 40 gallon. It wasn't a big 55, it was more like a 40 gallon metal container. It was bright yellow. I remember it vividly. My mother had several of them. And they would be in like out in the garage. And every once in a while, Mother would go out to the garage and she'd open up one of those cans, which was always filled with bars of soap. And she would get a smaller little cardboard box and put all these bars of soap in, put it in our linen closet. And then when we needed a bar of soap, we would go get a bar of soap. I did not know you could go to the store and buy a bar of soap. The reason we had access to this was, unfortunately, my great aunt had obsessive compulsive disorder, which back then wasn't diagnosed. And you just, it was just one of those weird idiosyncrasies. She washed her hands multiple times a day, and she had to use a new bar of soap.
Every time.
Every time she washed her hands. And so her sisters would, they all lived together, three little old maids that lived together. Her sisters knew how wasteful that was, so they would take these bars of soap and get her to throw them away in a special bin, and then everybody in the world that could come and get these bars of soap. And I'm telling you the truth, I thought everybody got their bar of soap out of a cardboard box in their linen closet. I didn't know it came pre-wrapped and was at the store. And so we were able to, for years, have free soap thanks to crazy Aunt Hilda. But the problem is, she really needed help.
Yes.
And back in those days, you didn't talk about those problems. Aren't you glad I'm outing you now, Hilda? You didn't talk about those problems, and you certainly didn't suggest that anybody go see a psychiatrist or something, because there's something really wrong with washing your hands four times an hour and using a new bar of soap.
Yeah.
And getting up in the middle of the night when you haven't touched anything and washing your hands.
Yes. Yes.
So that's obsessive compulsive disorder.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell. Yes. But there's multiple variations on the theme.
Right.
So we all probably know somebody, or maybe ourselves, we have a little bit of this.
Correct.
It's a continuum, right? I mean, it's from everybody's got some little compulsion.
Yes.
It's when it becomes obsessive and interferes with your regular life.
You got it, Mary. And you know, we usually say if it's taking more than an hour a day out of your life and impacting it, interfering with your functioning in some way, then it's a problem and you should probably look into it. But your story is such a great one to describe, you know, what it is and how family members and people who care about the person who's having the obsessions play into it, right? And the effort to help that person suffer less. You know, but sometimes it's just easy to sweep that under the rug versus being like, oh my gosh, your hands are raw. They're going to get infected. You know, you can't go out to eat because you need to go wash your hands a bunch of times a day. You know, it does get in the way. And you're right, it takes so many different forms. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it today, because I think there's sometimes things that are going on that people don't recognize as obsessive compulsive disorder. And it's embarrassing. And they don't want to talk to people about it, and they think that might be crazy. You're not crazy. This is what's going on, you know, and there is a way to get help for it. And so I thought that's why it might be helpful to talk about today.
I agree with you, Melissa McKelvey from Cornerstone. And so let's start. Let's maybe start. You do whatever outline you want to do, but I guess the first would be how to recognize in ourselves and in others what could be considered obsessive-compulsive behavior, because almost anything can be a behavior if you do it too much. And
yes,
even something you have to do can be too much.
Right.
I mean, you have to lock the door every night,
right?
But you have to check it 48 times.
Right. And it's okay to check the knobs on your stove, but not if you go out to your car, leave to go to work, and have to come back halfway to check the knobs of your stove. And you have to do that three times. So now you're late to work every day and you're getting written up and you might lose your job because you have to check your stove knobs all those times, right? So really, Mary, what you want to look at first is the thought process, the obsessive process, right? Do you have thoughts that come up that are persistent, recurrent, and really disturbing to you, really bother you and cause you pain? Because the behavior is just a way to get away from that, right? It's a way to rescue you from that thought and feeling you're having. It's a way to get rid of it, to escape from it, to avoid it. So you're right. Any kind of behavior can do that. But we got to know what that thought is, right? What's that feeling you're having? Is it disgust? Is it desperate fear? And what is the thought behind that?
Okay. So first you have to identify, what is it I'm feeling when I also feel compelled
yes.
to do this?
Yeah.
Checking doorknobs, checking for safety issues. Is biting your fingernails obsessive compulsive, or is that some other disorder?
Well, it can be a bad habit. If you're biting it because you think my fingernails have to be perfect, and if they get a little bit too much this way or that way, then it's bad and I can't tolerate that bad feeling and I have to get rid of it now.
So if you're grooming them into a point, but if you're just nervousness, that's
yes.
another bad habit. Oh,
that's
good.
Just a bad habit.
Ah, good. I probably
you're
have
okay, Mary.
That's another mental disorder I have. Oh, good. We'll discuss that.
We'll talk
see,
about that
I
later.
Go through phases. Like right now I have nails.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have nails probably now for a couple of months, and then something will happen,
mm-hmm.
and I won't have nails. and it's just weird. I was talking with somebody the other day. I mean, again, Mary, just now that you've thrown Hilda under the bus, why not throw yourself under the bus? When I was little, I sucked my thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean really sucked my thumb. And the problem with sucking your thumb is, even when you get old enough to know that's not appropriate, you still at night can't help it. So mm-hmm. I had arm braces. I had things in my mouth. I'd wake up with my thumb practically bitten off by these picket fence spikes they'd put in, and I'd still gnaw my thumb. My arms would be all twisted around trying to get out of this bracer they put on me. The thing that made me stop, and this is crazy, I was a freshman in high school. I got my braces off and got my retainer, and I could no longer feel the top of my mouth, so I no longer soothed. And I just quit.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you talk about embarrassing, you know, you're mm-hmm. getting ready for a test mm-hmm. in seventh grade and you have to go have a suck
mm-hmm.
in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Just like,
right.
Mom would
right.
go outside and have a smoke after dinner and I'd go out and have a suck, you know? I mean, so these things, it happens when you're a kid. It's a soothing mechanism.
Yeah.
It's perfectly, a lot of kids do it. My
right.
problem was they couldn't take my thumb away.
Yes.
And that became very problematic because I couldn't stop that behavior at night. I would continue to
yeah.
do it, which is why I needed braces, which I thought putting the braces on would stop.
No.
That didn't stop.
Just the retainer when you couldn't
so
feel it.
So whatever you're doing that is overboard, think about what the trigger is. So whatever that is,
yes.
you know, it just
yes.
is a trigger. What are some typical behaviors that people might notice in others? And we need to be kind and gentle about it because
absolutely.
It is a problem.
Right, right. Well, one of the things, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this is that there's some things that we don't always recognize as OCD. So things like health anxiety, right? People who think, oh, I've got cancer. Oh, I've got a brain tumor, right? They get a headache and then it's, I've got a brain tumor. And then that becomes this persistent thought that's really scary, right? Because it feels life or death. And then they spend hours on WebMD. Right? You know, they can't interact with their kids or go to games or make dinner because I've got to keep looking on WebMD until I find the answer to do I have a brain tumor or not? What are all the symptoms? And what do you think happens then, Mary, when you start looking that up?
Everything you have is a symptom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it
highly suggestible people.
Well, and it doesn't matter if you look at 10 symptoms of a brain tumor and you don't have 9. If there's one...
Right.
Because this is part of OCD. You want certainty. It's all or nothing. You can't tolerate, right? And none of us
There's
like
no
it.
There's no gray area. It's
no,
got to be black or white.
It's got to be all or nothing. And so that living with a little bit of uncertainty, you know, there's so many things we'll never know. But when you think it's life or death, I have a brain tumor, I don't. I have cancer or I don't. You want 100%, right?
Well, another interesting thing is, you know, I have a lot of medical professionals on. And I am highly susceptible and easily put under a state of hypnosis. So
mm-hmm.
I'm a highly suggestible person,
mm-hmm.
not susceptible, suggestible. Anyway, I used to tease because if they were talking about kidney disease, my kidneys would start to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
If they were talking about, you know, thrombosis in your leg, my vein, I swear, it just closed on its own,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I laughed so hard because one time Dr. Sutherland was on talking about prostate cancer. And, of course, I don't possibly have one. And I said, Doctor, I think I've got it. After hearing your description of it, I'm sure I have it. And so I do sympathize.
Right.
Because I'm one of those people that the gray area, you know,
mm-hmm.
is maybe not so good for me either.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to be one of those people who's always worried and concerned.
Right.
But again, the anxiety disorder versus obsessive compulsive disorder. It's just the way you manifest itself.
Yes, okay. Exactly. And obsessive compulsive disorder is related to an anxiety disorder, right? It is an anxiety disorder, but it takes a very specific form, right? And it's that urgency of like, I've got to get rid of this thought. I can't take it. I've got to get rid of it. You know, and the other reason I wanted to talk about it today, Mary, is because the treatment is scary, right? Because we know what the treatment is.
You got to stop doing that.
Right? You got to take away your avoidance and escape. But when you go for treatment with someone who's familiar with OCD, right, they recognize, hey, we're going to take this slowly, right? I'm not going to make you wipe your hands on the toilet, right? We're going to go little by little until you can trust me. And then we will do this. We're gonna keep you from doing those things, washing immediately, and doing those things that get rid of that feeling. And we're gonna learn that, you know what, I can handle this feeling, and I can do these things, and we can retrain our brain. You know, that's something when you and I were younger, right? They would always tell us, "Oh, your brain's set by the time you're 5. You can't change it. 5, you're done. Personality's developed." Now we know that is so much not true, right?
Well, it's important those first 5 years,
yes,
but it's not the end of it.
Exactly.
There is plasticity.
Exactly.
Any trauma that happens to you before 5 can be resurrected from.
Yes, yes.
Yes, Daffy, my pillow. I can make it to work without Daffy now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you know what? It's really weird because I still have to sleep with 2 pillows, one mm-hmm. for my head and one to hold.
Yep.
So
yep.
I guess, you know, again, it's okay as long as it doesn't bother other people,
right,
or bother you. I
exactly.
mean, the fact that I really never got over Daffy. Yes, I'm 65 years old, and I still, thank God I quit sucking my thumb, but I still have Daffy. I've had 20 Daffys since
right,
Daffy.
Right, right.
Most of us grow out of these things. It's the things that you either don't grow out of, or then you get a different manifestation of it, that's where it becomes difficult.
Right, right.
And you did mention the treatment. And so the first thing we have to do is see this in ourselves and honestly say to ourselves, even though it's scary, I know this isn't right, and mm-hmm. I have to stop doing this because mm-hmm. it's impacting my ability to do my daily tasks and to interact with other people. So that's the first step, admit mm-hmm. you have a problem.
Yes.
Or admit that someone you know has a problem, but you can't, you know, then you can start working on that, but you can never force them. And how you do that is very, don't... You're crazy. Quit washing your hands is not the mm-hmm. way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about, first you have to identify. And if you can do that, then you can get the courage up to seek help. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the fact that seeking help is scary because you obviously are very conditioned to have these responses. And you're going to have to be broken of that habit. And mm-hmm. that mindset has to change. And it can. It doesn't seem like it at first, but it can. There are success stories, and you can be one of them, and Cornerstone wants to help you if you have obsessive compulsive disorder. I have an obsessive compulsive disorder at 9:36 to head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. I'm not breaking this habit or I'll get fired. So we'll be back and learn what's happening more with Melissa McKelvey from Cornerstone. But first, Rex Battery, my heroes. They got me a new battery last week for my car. Yay! They're my heroes. They bring you this report. It is 9:41, and we are back. Melissa McKelvey is here to talk about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. You know, there's been television shows like Monk, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's a source of almost entertainment to see people who, I guess Sherlock Holmes was kind of an OCD type of personality. But, of course, it dramatically impacts their life, and you see that, you know, in Monk and stuff like that, how they can't function in society. But there is help available, and that's where Cornerstone and other therapists come in. So the first part is realizing you have a problem, and then you seek help. So, Melissa McKelvey, what can be done to retrain our brain so that we no longer obsess over these compulsory actions we feel we must take?
Well, Mary, I love how you talked about it a minute ago when you said it takes courage, right? Because it is. Besides the awareness, it takes courage to say, okay, here's this thing that I know is getting in the way of my life, and I know it's time to stop, but man, it's been going on a long time, right? And the thing with OCD is that it reinforces itself, right? So when you feel that, that urge, right, to wash your hands, to check the light switch, to ask somebody for reassurance, that's a compulsion also. And to stop yourself from doing that, man, you got to live with that feeling and that thought. And that is what we help you do in therapy, right? We want to be able to say, like, yeah, this really stinks, man. It stinks to have that thought and feel that way. And you know what? You can handle it. You can. And a lot of other people feel that way. It isn't just you. And you can handle it. And here's how we're going to handle it. And, you know, you don't have to wash your hands right now. Let's see if we can go another 5 minutes, right? Can you go 5 minutes? And we believe you can do it. And you can do it. And, yeah, you have to learn to allow yourself to feel something that's uncomfortable, right? It's like we say, you have to have pain in life, but you don't have to have suffering. And that's what OCD turns into, right, is suffering. But you can't get through it without a little pain. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be hard.
So is it just stretching out the time between your compulsion actions? You eventually want to eliminate completely the compulsive action. So is it just start with 5 minutes and go to 10? Or, I mean, that could take a long time, but I guess you've mm-hmm. had it for most of your life.
Right.
Whatever days it takes to get rid of it. I mean, what is the hopeful timeline? Well, you never get rid of it. Just like my mother quit smoking, but every once in a while she said, yeah, I kind of want a cigarette.
Right.
But she didn't.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it never really went away.
You got to be patient with it. You're right. And so sometimes it's stretching out time. That's a definite way to do it. It may be doing, you know, this little thing. Like if you have obsessive thoughts about being stuck in an elevator, right? So you compulsively avoid elevators. Maybe you press the button, right? Maybe you walk in and walk out. Maybe you walk in and go up one floor. You know, these are all, you do it little by little and you keep yourself from escaping, right? Because that just makes the OCD worse. It's like, okay, oh, that felt good, right? The relief is what makes it worse, because that relief you feel when you wash your hands or you check the knob says, see, this was super dangerous. Thank God you went back and checked, right? Just feeds that loop in our brain that says this is a dangerous thing. And it's not. That's the thing we retrain.
Probably one of the most noted people who had obsessive compulsive disorder was Howard Hughes. And in the movie about his life, we saw that, you know, he had trouble drinking out of, he could make love to a woman, but he couldn't eat off her plate or share a fork or share a, you know, and so, of course, he ended up dying really alone in a horrifying situation. All the money in the world helped buffer him for a while. I think of John Madden, the NFL commentator. He would not fly.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely drove. If he had a gig in L.A. and the next one was in New York, he drove.
Mm-hmm.
He would not fly. And that's a grown man who's successful in many ways and never got over that.
Right.
And we don't know what caused that for him to initially have that feeling. But until we get back to the root cause again, because something's making you check the door or check the knob or check the pilot light in the furnace, but it's not a true belief that the door's unlocked or that the gas is on. There's something else. And that's where the therapist has to get into the trigger thought that causes that specific behavior. It may have nothing to do.
Yes.
The thought may have nothing to do with the actual behavior.
Right. Exactly, Mary. And we can realize that. So then you can kind of talk yourself through that in, you know, in one sense. And the other part of therapy and the other part to put in play here, Mary, is that you also have to say, my life is more important than this one little thing. I've got to take back my life from OCD. You know, I care about people. I want to have relationships. I want to be good at my job. I want to have time for my kids. So we have to take back our life from OCD, because OCD will take as much room as you will give it. And you'll see it creep into all kinds of areas.
Does it get worse?
It can
over time.
And it can change to other things.
And what kind of, I mean, obviously there's a toll to pay for family members. So what is the best way? Because if you're not going to self-diagnose and you're not going to seek help on your own, you cannot drag other people into mental health.
Right.
You know, they have to come somewhat willingly to the table, although you can encourage them and be supportive.
Yeah.
How do you speak to someone who you notice?
Yes.
And this has got to be somebody in your wheelhouse that makes a difference. It's not a coworker who just does weird things. This has got to be somebody you care about, because if it's a coworker that's doing something bizarre, you think is bizarre, it's really none of your damn business unless it affects you, and it really doesn't affect you. It's just annoying.
Right. And that's the key there. Does it affect you?
Is I mean, you know, if they've got a bubble wrap affliction and they have unlimited amount of bubble wrap, then you might have to say something. But most of the time, if they undo a package and they must compulsively pop the wrap, you can either excuse yourself or ask them to excuse themselves.
For sure. It is the technique I will talk to people about is being supportive but not accommodating, right? You do not want to accommodate the OCD. You don't want to make it easier for OCD, for anxiety to get what it wants. You want to be supportive and, you know, babe, I know this is hard, right? It's really hard and I know you got this, right? I know you can do it. You know, can I help you? Can I do anything?
I'll sit here with you for five minutes, and then when 5 minutes is up, if you really still need to wash your hands, you can do it.
Right.
But maybe you won't feel that way.
Exactly. And it brings up a good point with kids, too, because as parents, we do not want our kids to be in any kind of pain. And so sometimes we can accommodate for them when we should be a little more supportive and less accommodating. And it's hard to do. It's hard to know where that line is.
Well, that line is interesting because how close is the mental, you know, your brain is an interesting aspect. If you overeat, if you have a gambling addiction, you're addicted to the home shopping network, whatever, you've got to, you know, wash your hands. You've got to check the thing. You've got to turn around three times. I mean, I'm not going to say this one, but there's a certain thing I used to do until I said, you might be slipping over the edge. I had to put on my undergarments a certain way.
Yep.
And who cares? Except one day I went, how did that develop?
Yes.
You know, and I said, just don't do it. Well, of course, it became such a force of habit that the next day I did it, but I said, now we're going to remember this.
Right.
You know, we're going to remember not to do this. And now I still may want Daffy, my pillow, but I've gotten over that. It's just so bizarre. There is no end to the weirdo things that we can get involved in. But again, it a lot of it depends on how much it's impacting your life.
Yes.
And that's where it all comes down. So how much is addictive behavior, like overspending? Because Dave Ramsey comes on, he's basically, stop doing that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was that simple, duh. You know, Dave, get a little bit more compassion. I mean, people don't really want to do this. It's something that they're almost out of control. You can help them, but saying just stop doing that. You can't just tell somebody, quit doing that. That's not going to be helpful.
No, you can't. It's different than addictive behavior, but it certainly can look a lot like it, right? It can feel like an addiction because it's still that urge, right? It's that strong urge you feel like, I have to do this or something bad is going to happen.
Whereas opposed to gambling or eating or buying things, I feel good.
Yes.
I've got that high, and all of a sudden that high is ending. I've got to redo it.
Yes.
And of course, the problem with that is you do it more and more and more for less result.
Right.
You suddenly have to gamble all the time till you're $15 million in the hole, like Ohtani, whatever his name is, guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to, knowing that you've got a problem and getting help for it early, you also have to be careful, I'm sure, a therapist, that they don't just take one behavior and then direct it somewhere else where they have an equally destructive behavior.
And that goes to recognizing what you said a minute ago, Mary, which is that you might always live with it somewhat, right? Yes, we want to get rid of the behavior, the compulsion that's getting in the way of your life. And you also want to be somewhat accepting and understand that, you know what, these things are going to pop up here and there, but I know how to deal with them now, right? I'm going to catch them earlier. And I may also wonder, you know, am I going to drive off this bridge if I cross over it, right? And every once in a while, you're going to drive over a bridge and be all clenched, right?
But
you're still going to
do it.
But you're going to do it. And that is the difference, right? And you'll be like, whoo. You know, I remember what that was like when I couldn't go over the bridge. So you become accepting. You understand that those obsessive thoughts may be a part of you, but they won't run your life. And you can like put them in your backpack, and you may carry around with you for a long time, but they don't keep you from doing the things you want to do.
That's the key to all mental health.
Yes.
Are you living a full and satisfying life? If there is something impeding you, whatever that something is, seek some help from a mental health professional. And it's always so interesting how people think that, like somebody once said, well, just take, if you're depressed, just take St. John's wort. That may have some beneficial effect.
Mm-hmm.
But if I broke my leg and the bone was sticking out, I wouldn't go buy 5 gallons of milk and say, milk builds strong bones. If
right.
I just drink 5 gallons of milk, my leg will magically heal itself.
Yes.
You need a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that, you know, some of us are bad about our health, but I mean, I get my cholesterol checked. I get my glucose level checked. I keep track of my weight. I don't do much about it, but I keep track of it. You know, I take care of myself mm-hmm. to a certain degree, but people, it's like, oh, I couldn't go to a mental health counselor. I mean, when I make an appointment with Dr. Dana Altman, I don't wear a disguise and sneak in there and go, I'm here for my checkup.
Right.
I hope my heart's okay. Will people talk about me if it's not? You know, there's a stigma still.
There is. And, you know, it's part of why I wanted to get on here and talk about something specific, right? We talk about some pretty general things, but I wanted to talk about something specific that, you know, a lot of people, 1 in 100 people have OCD, right? But only 40% go get therapy for it. That's a lot of people whose lives are being impacted by OCD that the help is out there, you know? And when we taking stock of our life and see how it is. Like you said, are we having a rich, full, meaningful life? We are not going to be happy all the time. We're not going to be. That's going to make us miserable if we try to be happy all the time. We can't do it.
Right.
But we want to, are we moving forward? Are we doing things that matter? Are we doing things that matter to us? Are we being with the people we want to be with, right? If we aren't and something's getting in the way of that, do not let the stigma of going to a therapist keep you from living your best life.
That is true for everything. If your children are suffering, if you're suffering, if there's a little problem in your marriage, nip it, as
mm-hmm.
Barney Fife would say, nip it in the bud. These things don't necessarily go away on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you do need a little bit of strategy and maybe some medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, nobody has to remind me to take my medication every day because
mm-hmm.
I want to take my medication every day. I want to feel good. I want to feel good on a sunny day and on a cloudy day. So take whatever medication, seek whatever help you think you need to seek, but for heaven's sakes, do get some help. Cornerstone is standing by to help you. There are other places that are standing by.
Yes.
And remember, most major medical plans now include some form of mental health therapy, which is one reason we getting over the stigma.
Yes.
Well, gee, it must not be real if my insurance won't cover it. It is real.
Mm-hmm.
So get help that you seek. Anything else for the good of the cause?
Nope, that's it, Mary. Thank you so much for having us on.
Drew, you awake?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm doing good.
I was going to say, if I had your job, I'd be doing good too. Thank you for joining us. We'll do it all again tomorrow.